I'm going to take a liberty just because I have a question. I'm a family doctor. Mm-hmm. I listen to your presentation. I appreciate it, and I appreciate those specialists that have the knowledge you do. But almost your first slide surprised me that lung cancer is the number one cancer. And we know that, and we think of cigarettes as doing that. But obviously, we're in a state where that's not as big a player. Is there something else contributing to that?
Yes. So in Utah, obviously, we do have some people who smoke. The other thing that's big in Utah is radon. And so assessing homes for radon risk and minimizing those risks is one of the big pushes of our lung cancer program.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that. Another round of applause for Dr. Cohen. Come on up, Audrey.
Oh, no.
So our last speaker for our morning session, for our early morning session, is Dr. Audrey Roberts. When you think of Joy of Medicine, I knew that I had to have Audrey speak today. I wish I had kept a text communication that we had as she worked on figuring out the title for her talk today. I did delete that probably. But anyway, she's going to talk to us today. Her title is Keeping Abreast on Breastfeeding Medicine. Thank you, Audrey.
Thanks, Greg. Hi, everybody. Good morning. While I play around with the mic, it is a true joy to be a part of the Joy of Medicine Conference, and it feels like such a warm welcome to Utah. Luckily, what I do on a day-to-day basis as an OBGYN does involve a lot of joy. And a small subset of what I do is to help moms succeed with breastfeeding and their breastfeeding goals. I wasn't really nervous today until I saw my partner and formal mentor, Dr. Scott Rainierson, walk in. So pardon me if I'm a little shaky. Hopefully I'll do you proud. Just to kind of see who we have in the audience, a couple quick questions. How many of you still currently practice medicine and see patients in a clinical context? Raise your hands. Awesome. Phenomenal. Wonderful. And how many of you are from outside the state of Utah? Yay. Welcome. I feel more at home now. No, I'm just kidding. And how many of you treat women and children? Wonderful. Okay, good. At least my context is not completely off base. So for those of you that treat women and children, how many are OBGYNs? Welcome. How about family practice? Okay, great. And pediatrics? A few. Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Well, so for all of you, even those that were not in those last few subsets of providers, you'd be surprised how many times you are treating and caring for a breastfeeding mother-infant dyad. So we will get started with that. One last question. Any lactation consultants in the audience? Yay. Okay. All right. Actually, I'll go back for a second. I am a OBGYN with Ogden Clinic. I guess I should tell a little bit about myself. I was born and raised in rural Ohio, as was my husband. It was his residency match to the University of Utah that brought us here. And as anyone who will listen knows about me, I feel like we've hit the jackpot. So we're setting down roots and we absolutely love it here. We couldn't have felt more truly enveloped by a community than this area north of Salt Lake City. So thank you to all of you. I'm also a member of the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine. How many of you know about the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine? Raise your hands. Okay, wonderful. So there are a lot of professional organizations out there. The Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine was conceptualized in 1993 by a group of 12 providers, physicians, who were very passionate about breastfeeding. And their first meeting was in the summer of 1994. And the professional organization has grown by leaps and bounds to this point. For those of you that do a lot of breastfeeding medicine or feel passionate about it or see a lot of it in your practice, I encourage you to check out the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine. So why is breast milk feeding so important? So why am I up here today? Out of all the things I could talk to you about in this group at this conference, why are we talking about breastfeeding? Obviously, number one, I'm very passionate about it. But number two, it truly is the optimum, perfectly customized nutrition for all growing infants. Human breast milk is a living, dynamic, extremely beneficial substance. I hope that by the time I'm done with this presentation, you truly do feel like there is no comparison to commercial made formulas. Human milk, as I mentioned, is the recommended exclusive source of nutrition for infants in the 6 month of life, up until 6 months. It's only at 6 months that complementary foods should be introduced, and then breast milk should be continued to be given. And this recommendation is fully endorsed by just about anybody with clout in the medical community, such as the World Health Organization, UNICEF, the American Academy of Pediatrics, College of OBGYNs, the Preventative Task Force guidelines endorse this, the American Academy of Family Physicians. I could go on. And then, as I mentioned, human milk really should be continued to be given until 1 year of age. So it can be what is mixed with rice cereals, and it can continue to be given along with the initiation of the complementary foods. And all of the above organizations that I mentioned also endorse this as well. You can even feed human breast milk longer. So regardless of how you feel about an infant over one physically latching to the breast, breast milk can still be expressed, collected, pumped, if you will, and given to the infant as long as the mom desires to express that milk. And contrary to some popular belief that really makes me upset to hear, a subsequent pregnancy is not a contraindication to breastfeeding or breast pumping. Unless you have a high-risk pregnancy, we won't go into that today. Believe it or not, cultural studies in areas of the underdeveloped world have shown that the average self-initiated age of weaning for breastfeeding is 2 to 4 years of age. So what are some of the benefits of breastfeeding? Why is this so important? So as I mentioned, in the short term for the infant, breast milk is the optimum source of nutrition. Many studies have come out in the last 10 years giving us, shedding light onto why this is so important and supporting this statement. Number one, I think especially after the talk this morning about bariatric surgery, there is a decreased incidence of obesity. A very large-scale meta-analysis showed a 26% reduction in the odds of a child eventually being overweight or obese. And this was consistent across all socioeconomic statuses and could not be explained by any other confounders. For the infant in the short term, they have enhanced gastrointestinal function. So just because the baby's born, obviously we all know they continue to grow exceptionally fast, and the GI tract is not excluded from that. We'll talk a little bit about the decreased incidence of necrotizing enterocolitis. For the gastrointestinal function of the infant in the short term, there are growth factors and immune components that are protective against invasive disease. So they've shown that breastfed infants have less diarrhea or vomiting illnesses and are generally have a stronger gut microbiome. And most of that is contributed to by the colonization of bifidobacteria and lactobacillus, which you may have heard about in over-the-counter probiotics and in studies regarding gut health. And these are directly transferred to the infant through the breast milk. And as the primary first and optimum source of nutrition, breast milk helps establish this gut microbiome before other bacteria that are not as healthful or that could be pathogenic take hold. And so thus, as you can imagine, these infants have stronger host defenses. They've shown studies time and time again that breastfed infants have a decreased incidence of overall infectious disease while they are breastfeeding, specifically a lower incidence of all infections such as GI infections, respiratory infections, ear infections, bladder infections, et cetera, in the first year of life. And this benefit does not go away as the infant transitions into childhood. some long-term benefits of breastfeeding. There's an overall reduction in the risk of childhood cancer, which I also thought was not as timely after following the last presentation, but basically anytime you can reduce the risk of cancer, you're doing a good thing. So these children have a decreased risk of developing lymphoma or leukemia. One of my favorites, as the OBGYN who's primarily caring for the mother, there is improved psychological well-being. They've tried to show associations with improved behavior, improved bonding and attachment. In our culture, where we're finally starting to recognize, talk about, and treat mental health disorders and behavioral disorders more appropriately, it is very fascinating to see how the role of breastfeeding and the mother-infant bonding could reduce the incidence of those conditions. There's also significant analgesic properties for the skin-to-skin aspect of the mother-infant dyad's care, as well as breastfeeding. I encourage all of my patients, as their infant, their newborn, is undergoing heel sticks and circumcisions, maybe, or other procedures in the hospital immediately after birth, that they skin to skin and offer to have the nurse do the heel stick while they're holding their infant skin to skin, or breastfeed immediately before or after a procedure such as a circumcision. And they've shown that stress levels and overall, negative physiologic responses are reduced in these infants. They've also shown now that there's enhanced cognitive development later in childhood and adolescence. Some of the nutrients in breast milk that cannot be mimicked in formula cross the blood-brain barrier and are helpful in the neurodevelopment during this impressionable time. They've also shown that children who were breastfed score higher on IQ tests and neurodevelopment assessments in early childhood and middle childhood. So, if you haven't gotten it yet, in compared to formula, human milk does several beneficial things. Number one, it increases the rate of gastric emptying. So when we have infants who are, say, in the NICU or have a GI concern, or we just want to be extra cautious, we do keep in mind that breast milk helps to promote this gut motility. And for those of you that haven't changed your fair share of dirty diapers, you may know that breastfed infants have a very distinct stool compared to formula-fed infants. Formula-fed infants are much more predisposed to things like constipation. And normal stools for a breastfed infant are these yellow CD stools. I figured after breakfast we wouldn't introduce any pictures at this time. Breast milk also increases intestinal lactase activity, and this has been studied in premature infants, but we draw the conclusion that it's in all infants. This improves digestion and breakdown and improves the ingestion of nutrients. There's also decreased intestinal permeability early in life. So in addition to colonizing the gut and strengthening it, it actually helps close some of the tight junctions, or helps the junctions become tight in the intestinal wall, therefore increasing decreasing the permeability and helping prevent invasive disease. And this is especially true in our premature infants, where we're really worried about just something simple, maybe like a GI infection, really becoming life-threatening. And speaking of life-threatening complications, breast milk decreases the incidence of necrotizing enterocolitis in premature infants. They've shown that premature infants who receive human milk have a lower incidence, and I would say the majority, if not all, of NICUs have now transitioned to providing human breast milk, or at least recommending that they be allowed to give it by asking the parents' permission. How many of you have heard of human milk banks? Wonderful. Okay, so the first human milk bank was actually created and organized in 1909 in Vienna. And since then, human milk banks have come a long way. Last I knew, there were milk banks in over 37 countries, and there are huge movements now to have milk banks opening in most of the states across the United States. And there's also legislation and movements to standardize and kind of universally organize these milk banks, at least in the United States, much like blood banks. So if all of you could kind of put human milk banking in the same life-saving, life-helping, fascinating context as a blood bank, I think that really helps. And I also use that analogy for my patients. So if you had a loved one or your infant needed a blood transfusion, you would be receptive of this product from another human or another humans who are essentially donating their life-saving product, and then it has been screened and tested and treated so that there is very little to no risk of communicable disease. And so this is the context in which I put human milk, at least for infants that maybe the mom is not yet producing or they were born very premature. And we try to encourage the use of human milk specifically in the NICU. Continuing, human milk provides proteins such as lactoferrin, lysozyme, and the secretory component of immunoglobulin A. And this is probably one of the biggest take-home messages in this presentation, because formula cannot do this. Lactoferrin, for those of you that don't know, has antimicrobial activity when it's not bound to iron. There's large amounts of iron in infant formula, so even just one infant formula feeding in an otherwise exclusively breastfed infant can completely alter the gut microbiome. They've done studies on the flora of these infants, so we find it very frustrating and tragic when the hospitals say, oh, the blood sugar's low, let's just give formula. There is also lysozyme in human breast milk, which acts to cleave bacterial cell walls. And the secretory immunoglobulin A is the essential gift of the immune system from the mother to the infant in these first few stages of life. So the antibodies then are present, and this is essentially the passive immunity given to the infant from the mother. And breast milk also contains active live maternal white blood cells, which go out there, and they don't care if they're in the infant's body or the mother's body. They're going to fight infection and do good there. Unfortunately, human milk banked milk usually has most of, if not all, the white blood cells gone because of the processing. So let's move on to mom. Short-term benefits of breastfeeding for the mother, latching of the infant to the breast or using a pump, either one, triggers oxytocin release. And this is extremely helpful to the mother postpartum. So I see it in the hospital. Moms are complaining of a lot more uterine contractions or noticing that they feel cramping when the infant latches. However, this is all part of the natural physiologic process of the birth, so helps involute the uterus, helps the uterus return to a normal pre-pregnancy size quicker, and also these contractions help increase the mechanical form of reducing blood loss for the mom postpartum. Oxytocin and prolactin, both hormones of breastfeeding, decrease stress. So we've shown that their activity in the body of the mother immediately postpartum has a very positive impact on overall social behaviors, whether it's bonding with the infant, postpartum depression reduction, overall sense of feeling like she's at least rocking the motherhood thing in some aspects when other parts of the day seem harder. And so this is very important for the mom immediately after birth. There's also the enhanced weight loss benefit of breastfeeding. So on average, a woman who's exclusively breastfeeding one infant burns an additional 500 calories per day. So there is nutritional requirements and hydration requirements that are needed to support breastfeeding. But obviously in a woman who's gained the recommended 25 to 35 pounds after they deliver, say, a 7.5-pound infant and some of the amniotic fluid come out and the placentas come out, there's still those additional reserves. And we do feel that they are for the use of breastfeeding. So the mom might as well burn those calories and go back to a healthy pre-pregnancy weight with the help of breastfeeding. There is also the benefit of prolonging anovulation. So the body has this fascinating natural mechanism to say, oh, if I'm producing this much breast milk, there must be an entire human to feed and take care of. Maybe we shouldn't have another one quite yet. And so in the first 6 months of life, as long as the mom has not had a menstrual cycle and is exclusively breastfeeding a solitary infant or more, without any introduction of supplementation such as formula or complementary foods, they should be anovulatory, and this is just as, if not more effective than the use of condoms. And we refer to this as the lactation amenorrhea method. A side note on that, we do recommend that once you plan to initiate complementary foods that you decide what you're going to use for contraception at that point, because it is much more likely once the demand of the breast milk goes down that the ovaries will return to ovulating. Long-term benefits of the mother. I tried to keep this slide short and sweet because I could go on for days because that's my passion. But there is a decreased lifetime incidence of breast cancer, and in a current population where 1 in 8 to 9 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer over the course of their lifetime, I think this is a significant benefit. There's also a decreased lifetime risk of cardiovascular disease, which is fascinating. The Nurses' Health study specifically demonstrated that women who breastfeed for a lifetime total of 2 years or more, when compared to women who did not breastfeed, had significantly less cardiovascular disease. And they actually measured this in some women, measuring the amount of atherosclerosis in their blood vessels. And that the total duration of breastfeeding does inversely correlate with the degree of atherosclerosis. And there's also a reduced risk of developing diabetes. So I really, really, probably for all my patients, I can be found guilty of promoting breastfeeding, but I really encourage my moms who I diagnose with gestational diabetes or pre-gestational diabetes to breastfeed, because it helps promote a healthy glucose level. It improves the insulin sensitivity, and it's overall beneficial for moms. The economic benefits of breastfeeding, I thought this was something fun to go into today. Obviously, there's the upfront savings of not having to buy formula to feed a baby, which they've estimated to be approximately $1,000 a year. Obviously, there's Cadillac forms of infant formula that you could spend a lot more money on, but that is an estimate right there. There's also significantly decreased medical costs overall. So infants who are breastfed for at least 3 months have fewer acute medical care office visits at the pediatrician, require fewer medications, and there's fewer invasive procedures and hospitalizations on these infants. And one study estimated a savings of $331 per single infant in short-term medical care costs just for exclusively breastfeeding for the first 3 months of life. In the managed care setting, full breastfeeding is estimated to reduce total medical expenses by at least 20% compared to never breastfeeding at all. And then on the greater context, obviously there's fewer work-related absences in families who are breastfeeding their infants. So obviously if you have a sick child, you're going to miss work, you're not going to be productive at your job that day. And so this has an overall benefit for the economy at large. There's also a reduced incidence of chronic diseases, and as I mentioned before, breast cancer in female infants, or even female women, adult women, which would lead to significantly less medical costs throughout the course of life as well. So the huge take-home message here is, if nothing else about the science of breast milk got you all riled up, there was a study in 2007, and I'm sure these numbers are bigger by now, that estimated the total national cost savings of $13 billion for a year, so just in 2007, if 80 to 90% of families in the United States complied with this recommendation set by all these fabulous organizations to breastfeed for a minimum of 6 months of life. So why aren't women breastfeeding? So some of the recognized breastfeeding barriers include non-Hispanic Black population. I didn't share a lot about my training, but I just finished residency in Detroit, where we had a huge initiative to get our African-American mothers breastfeeding. They've also shown that if the mother is less than 25 years old at the age of the infant's delivery, they're more unlikely to breastfeed. Unmarried status, education less than a high school graduate, current cigarette smoking of not just the patient but any household member are all risk factors for not breastfeeding. Having an unplanned, unintended pregnancy also contributes to that. delivery of a low birth weight infant, no matter what the mom's breastfeeding goals are, is a risk factor. And we feel that this is mostly due to the separation at the time of delivery and then the lack of support in the medium postpartum period for breastfeeding for these mothers. Sadly, there's also data to show that participation in the Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, which most of you probably know as WIC, decreases the rate of breastfeeding, most likely due to the manufacturing and marketing involvement in that program of free formula. And then women who return to work within 6 weeks of delivery are also less likely to initiate breastfeeding and are less likely to breastfeed beyond age 3 months. So how can we prevent this from happening? How can we break down these barriers? World Health Organization has put together this, this is a table summarizing their formal document of the 10 steps to successful breastfeeding. I won't go through them here due to time constraints, but they are the foundation for the Baby Friendly Hospital Initiative. It has been very eye-opening to me to come to a region where there is no baby-friendly hospital, as I was trained in one, and most of the hospitals in southeastern Michigan were transitioning over to become baby-friendly. So if you see me in your hospital or you hear my name in the next 5 to 10 years as I transition every single one of these hospitals to a baby-friendly hospital, please don't hate me. Thank you for that. And then really briefly, obstacles for sustained breastfeeding. So obviously breastfeeding difficulties, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to come talk today. I could give a whole presentation just on the difficult parts of breastfeeding, but that's the resource that I like to provide to women, and I'd be happy to provide to any of your patients. Anything from poor latch that can provide or cause nipple damage, which then obviously leads the mom to not want to or not be able to breastfeed. Infrequent feedings or not being instructed on how often to breastfeed, which can affect milk supply. And then also the number three reason why moms stop breastfeeding is their perception that they're not giving the baby enough, that they are inadequate. And I think of all the emotions that a new mom might go through after delivery, feelings of inadequacy pass through mom's brains at some point. And we like to hope that with breastfeeding, we can change that. But also a lack of support. So there's a large cultural component to breastfeeding, whether the family or immediate family members have a sexualized view of breastfeeding, whether or not they're supportive, specifically partners, those that live in the home, immediate family members like the patient's mother or grandmother, all can have a very positive or very negative impact on the duration of breastfeeding. And then namely you, my target audience, so people who would care for breastfeeding women, it's very, very important that these women, if you can't help them, you have someone or you know where you can turn to get them the support that they need during this challenging time. For the infants, obviously, in the first few months of life, I won't go into the topic of paid versus unpaid maternity leave and the duration of that, but it has been shown to negatively impact breastfeeding if a mom does not have paid leave and if it's not for an extended period of time. And then namely, the workplace environment. So there was legislation passed, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act mandates reasonable break time and place to pump, which is defined as a private, clean, and safe space that is not a bathroom for a mother to express milk and or breastfeed. And then it goes on to give some requirements of this area, such as a sink, an outlet, possible refrigeration or refrigeration capabilities, et cetera. And then obviously just the cultural mindset behind that woman's employer. So if you go back to work and your floor manager on a factory, you know, line is saying, hey, hasn't it been like 4 hours? Don't you need to go pump? That's a huge difference between someone who is essentially shamed or has obstacles put up in front of them for work just to be able to continue to breastfeed. Very, very quickly, myth or fact, because I get these questions all the time. There are very few absolute contraindications to breastfeeding. Please, please, before you tell your moms that they cannot feed their infant, that they must pump and dump, please consult myself. You can call anytime. My number will be on the last slide. Or resources for medications such as LactMed. So for all of you that said you're in primary care, I would encourage you to access this database if you don't already. There is an app for it, which makes searching breastfeeding clearance for medications very, very easy, and they have a specific summary page for every single medication on basically what we know or what we don't know about the safety of a medication during breastfeeding. That's LactMed. Please download it. For women undergoing procedures, anesthesia, if you are stable enough in, not PACU, but the immediate recovery area where you will go home from to eat, sleep, pee, walk, burp, poop, any of those things, you can breastfeed your baby. It's so devastating to hear a mom in my office who said, oh, my milk supply was fine until I had my bilateral tubal ligation, and then I was told I couldn't breastfeed for 12 hours, and it's been bad ever since. That's a myth. That's false, okay? If you consume alcohol, if you would drive, you can breastfeed your baby. There's a lot of people who you say, well, what does that mean? You know, you don't have to have a home breathalyzer, but if you can hold your baby and you can see your baby and you're not that inebriated, you can breastfeed your baby. So the blood alcohol content of your blood is, or woman's blood, is extremely dilute, and then the breast milk is a exudate directly derived from the serum at the time of latch, and it is even more dilute in breast milk, as you can imagine. So this myth that women have to pump and dump all milk after consuming alcohol is also false. And then for those of you that send your patients for radiology procedures, if it is not radioactive, they can breastfeed. I've had moms who've been told they can't breastfeed after a chest x-ray, after a CT scan, after I don't know, an MRI with gadolinium. There are reasons why, you know, we worry about these things because they're chemicals in the body. But if you didn't have a mom receiving radioactive iodine to kill her thyroid off or something like that, they can breastfeed. And there are great resources through the radiology community that actually will help guide you when it comes to breastfeeding. And there's also guidelines on the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine website. So please, please, please help us break down the barriers to breastfeeding. The good news is in the United States, 81% of newborn infants are at least initiating breastfeeding. The sad thing is that only 61% of those are breastfeeding at 3 months, and only 26%, at least as of 2016, are breastfeeding at 6 months. So what is happening in that interim? And all the things I mentioned can play into that, such as work-related constraints or lack of support or struggles that aren't addressed through a professional like myself. However, excellent news. Utah is one of the best states of breastfeeding, so I was pretty excited to move here. So I think that has to do with the large cultural support for the breastfeeding infant and mother in the first year of life. How many of you know a woman who's currently breastfeeding? Okay, wonderful. So we still have places where we can improve, and we could have a better rate than 70% at 6 months, but good job for us in Utah, okay? So in conclusion, as I said, breastfeeding and care for the mother-infant dyad is very important. So a lot of people are starting to refer to this as the fourth trimester. As a healthcare system, we need to take ownership of this. Obviously, we want to provide support for early childhood health, development, and wellness. Breastfeeding practices allow us to do that. As I mentioned, it helps the mother postpartum. And non-invasive maternity practices, immediate skin-to-skin, and early initiation of breastfeeding within the first hour of life are completely essential. And these are just few of the tenets of the 10 Steps to Successful Breastfeeding and the foundation of the Baby-Friendly Hospital Initiative. In my opinion, breastfeeding and promoting breastfeeding is a human rights issue. Every infant should have access to the best optimum nutrition once they are born. And it's not only a national health issue, but a world health issue. As you can see by the involvement of the World Health Organization and UNICEF and things like that. So please, on behalf of me and all women everywhere, help breastfeeding women you know achieve their goals. If you don't know how you can help a breastfeeding mom, just ask. You'd be surprised if it was just, you know, cueing her to pump or helping her feel supported and empowered during this time. In closing, I would love to quote the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine's position statement. It is the responsibility of the healthcare system, the media, business and marketing sectors, government, and society in general to inspire, prepare, and empower, as well as support and enable each woman to fulfill her breastfeeding goals and to eliminate obstacles and constraints to initiating and then sustaining optimal breastfeeding practices. Thank you so much. Sorry, I ran a little bit over. Does anybody have any questions?
Yes, I have one.
Oh, please.
So I had always thought that breastfeeding would help to inhibit allergies in the infant, but I have recently learned that even an entirely breastfeeding infant can develop allergy to cow's milk protein. How common is this, and what is the likelihood of resolution?
Yes, so I think it's very fascinating that we consider cow's milk protein reactions in the human body to be considered an allergy. So we are the only species in the entire world that consumes another species' milk. So think about that for a second. So your body is not meant to break down cow's milk protein. So it is not... It is not uncommon for adults or even teens as they go through life, and if they don't drink a ton of milk or milk, cow milk products, to become lactose intolerant, quote unquote. I am of the opinion that you are lactose intolerant from birth, at least as far as the proteins that come from cow's milk. They have shown that allergies in general, like seasonal allergies or those kind of things, are reduced by breastfeeding. But you also have to introduce complementary foods and things like peanuts and stuff that have highly allergenic potential in a very specific way. Hopefully that answers your question. Next.
The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends vitamin D supplementation when an infant is exclusively breastfed. I cannot honestly understand that recommendation, but I have seen some providers recommend to mothers that they supplement heavily vitamin D in an effort to bypass that so that the mother is giving the baby more breast milk, but I don't know any data that supports that either. Can you comment about those things?
Yes, so the need for vitamin D is there as the skeleton develops and for general nutritional development. If you're not giving vitamin D drops to the infant directly, I do recommend that my mom supplement heavily. So it's more so the fact that in the scope of things, breast milk is has a lower vitamin D content. But you'd be surprised, a lot of women who aren't breastfeeding are vitamin D deficient. And so their breast milk, if the mom is vitamin D deficient, will also be deficient in vitamin D. So I don't care if my infant mother dyad gets vitamin D through mom taking supplements and thus the breast milk having a higher vitamin D concentration, or if they prefer to supplement with infant drops directly. Go ahead.
Potential explanation for the lowered obesity risk in breastfed kids?
So very briefly, I'll try. It is felt that the breast milk contains specific signaling molecules that initiate satiety and signal satiety. So you'll notice a breastfed infant will generally start falling asleep at the breast when they're very young. They actually have to be really bothered and actually kept awake and encouraged to continue to breastfeed. And so the thought is that the entire body's nutritional cycle and the feelings of hunger and then the feelings of not being hungry are primed at a much lower volume of intake, and as well as the infant is taught to listen to those signals as the satiety of like a brand newborn infant does induce sleep, most likely, like I mentioned. So you'll see that if a baby is fed a bottle of formula, they'll just chug until it's all gone. Even if an entire bottle is excessive for their current point in life, which usually results then in vomiting. So I tell my patients, if you do have to supplement or you're supplementing with formula in a bottle, you really should pace that bottle feeding. The infant should be sat essentially straight up so that the milk does not have gravities and encouragement to just flow into the mouth. And then the nipple of the bottle, whether it's milk or formula, should be removed multiple times throughout the feeding, even if the infant gets frustrated. You really don't want infant formula supplementation to mimic Thanksgiving dinner for these kids at every single meal, which it does. Does that make sense? That was a very poor short-term answer to that. So, yes, please.
So I feel like in my practice, one of the things that I've noticed is that we have, like my medical assistants and some of our staff, they're young mothers, they want to breastfeed. And we try in our practice to allow them the time for that, but I just feel like as I think back over the last few months, I don't think that they've reached the goal of getting their, you know, out to 6 months exclusively breastfeeding, and I feel like we haven't been able to overcome whatever the barriers are in our patient flow in our clinic and our practice to allow mm-hmm. those young mothers to breastfeed. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, they're a resource for my patients. I mean, my patients look at them and ask them, oh, what advice do you have? And if they're failing at that, then, you know, that's a lost opportunity to teach my patients too. And I just wonder if there's something that you've been able to find in your practice or your flow that allows, you know, us with our staff to be able to set that example. That makes sense.
Yes, that's an excellent question. And yeah, you have to walk the walk and walk the talk. Full disclosure, I do not have children and I have not yet successfully breastfed and worked. So maybe I'll be back in 5 to 10 years to tell you guys about that experience. What I can say to all of you, especially those of you that run your practice or own your practice, even though it seems like you can't accommodate these women, you can. I draw the analogy to it saying, oh, I don't have time to exercise. Well, you can make time for it. So even though today's bottom dollar is getting pinched and crunched and we're all feeling the heat, if you will, of trying to be productive with what business time during the day we have, I would encourage you to help those moms think outside the box in order to help them reach those breastfeeding goals with the time to pump and things like that. Are we saying that they need a lunch break and a pump break that aren't one in the same? No, but I plan to buy my staff hands-free nursing bras when they have a baby as a gift. I want to give them the privacy of an area where they can eat lunch and pump and things like that. And then also just even asking the questions, like I said, if you want to know how you can help a breastfeeding mom, just ask. You know, maybe just having a little bit more wiggle room or helping them find someone to do a half a full-time equivalent position for a little while or something like that that, you know, can be a brainstorm to support them. A little bit of enthusiasm and support goes a long way. Okay, thank you guys so much. Sorry for that.